Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our full year 2021 results presentation. I'm Àlex Arteche, President and CEO of Arteche Group, and today I'm together with Luis Mari Pérez, General Manager of Arteche, and Ixone Vicente, CFO of the company. Before starting the results presentation, I would like to share with you that we are very excited to be a listed company since last June 2021. It is a very significant milestone in our history, initiated already 75 years ago. Being a listed company reinforce our management commitment to generate shareholders value. Let's start now with page two, with a few highlights of what has been year 2021. First of all, this year we generate earnings per share of 0.16 euros, which is eight times higher than a year ago, as a result mainly of higher sales volume and disciplined financial management. We achieved revenues of 282 million euros, which were up nearly 4% organically. I would like to emphasize also that we have a particular strength in the segments of measurement and monitoring systems, as well as in transmission and distribution grid automation. We were certainly, as most of the industry, impacted by supply chain constraints, which has had an impact on our EBITDA this year. EBITDA margin of 9.3% was down 200 basis points year-over-year, and the decline was driven mainly by higher input costs and supply chain disruptions. On price recovery, we made good progress in the year, but certainly not fast enough to prevent some operating margin erosion in the year. On top of that, we managed to optimize overhead structure costs in relative terms. As you see, CapEx, excluding acquisitions, reached 4% of revenues in the year, in line with the guidelines that we present to the market in the IPO. 60% of this CapEx was dedicated to capacity growth and maintenance, and 40% was focused on development of new products and technology. As a result of that, EBITDA minus CapEx amounted 56% of fiscal year 2021 EBITDA. Our inorganic growth targets for 2021, which we shared with the market in the time of the IPO, were fulfilled in the second half of the year with the acquisition of both Acitas Group and Smart Digital Optics. I will go later with this in the recall. In both transactions, the identified synergy that we identified at the beginning are even ahead of the schedule. Finally, as a last remark, net debt at the end of the year stood at nearly 51 million euros, which is equivalent to a leverage ratio of 1.95 versus 95 EBITDA versus 2.22 times a year ago. Going to slide three, as you see there, I would like here to share with you that 2021 has been a very transformational year for Arteche. A year in which we have broadened our reaches from a shareholder point of view, as well as from a business perspective. Starting with our listing in BME Growth Market last June 11, after a successful IPO, in which we were able to raise 30 million euros in funds for supporting our inorganic growth strategy until 2023. I will go to the inorganic growth strategy that we were able to materialize through the second half of the year. First one was in July 9 with the acquisition of Acitas Group. Acitas Group is a company founded 35 years ago, headquartered in Istanbul in Turkey, and with facilities in Turkey and Indonesia. This transaction boosts our industrial position in Asia, in line with our strategic plan and reinforce also our leadership in the medium and low voltage instrument market, instrument transformer market. We have identified synergies amounting €2 million, which I'm glad to say that are being implemented on track. The second operation was done in last December 17, with the joint venture between our one of our main customers, Hitachi Energy, in which in this GV we will keep the control with 51% of the company. This GV definitely means a further step to our plan located in Vitoria. We will join forces with Hitachi to promote a new solution, new gas insulated solution for the transformers. We really have a huge expectation for this GV. And last but not least, on December 21, we completed the acquisition of Smart Digital Optics, which is a company based in Australia, in which we already had the 57% of the company since 2010. SDO is a company in which we manufacture optical fiber current sensors for the electrical power industry. This is a technology that facilitates the digitalization of substations, and also this technology is also used in the renewable market interconnections, and it will gain increasing market share in the coming years. After these three transactions, we can say today that our group has a stronger position in the industry, with new strategic locations reaching already 175 countries sales. We have now a broader portfolio, and therefore we are adding value both to our customers and to our shareholders. This is a quick view of the year, and now I will now turn the word over to Luis Mari to walk through the main financial data of the year.
Thanks, Alice, and good morning to everybody. So I would like to start with the financial highlights for 2021. First of all, I would like to start by saying that 2021 has not been an easy year. We had to navigate through COVID, through supply chain and raw material issues. But I would like to say that we are very proud of the results we have achieved as a team. In terms of the metric that we are showing in this page, I would like to start with the orders. Orders, you know, in 2021 reached 285.9 million. Meaning a 3.7 increase versus previous year. Actually, the numbers could have been higher because our internal policy is not to book frame agreements that we want with customers. In terms of revenues, you know, we did 282 million, 6.6 better than previous year. EBITDA at 26.1. This is the area where we're struggling the most, and we'll be deep diving a little bit on this in the next slides. Outstanding net profit with 8.5 million euros, 16 cents per share, 8 times bigger than last year. And finally, our leverage ratio is below 2%, 1.95, which means a 23% reduction versus previous year. So I think we are very proud of the results. And also, I would like to point out that, you know, order intake in the first quarter of 2022 also looks very promising. If we move to the next slide, we can do a little bit of deeper analysis in terms of our top line performance. I would like to draw your attention to the left side of the slide, revenues top line. What you can see there is a waterfall chart showing the increase 21 versus 2020. Okay, it's 6.6%. Okay, we have divided between organic and inorganic. It's similar, 3.8% in inorganic, 4.2% inorganic. Inorganic is coming from our acquisition in Citas, Turkey, and Indonesia. Okay, so that's a medium voltage company. On the negative side, we have a 1.4% negative effect on our basket of currencies. Especially, this is coming from Mexico peso revaluation that impacted negatively. Okay. If we move now to the right side of the slide, we have two views for you. The one on the top is about the view by major product lines. If you remember from previous presentations, we are organizing three different major product lines. The one on the bottom, what we call measurement and monitoring systems, this is basically our instrument transformers business, which is the biggest in terms of volume. And you see that we have grown around 11.5%, double-digit growth last year. And I can split this in halves between what is organic and what is inorganic. I mentioned before, we have Acetas here. It's a medium voltage instrument transformer company, and their numbers starting July are included there. So it's a little bit less than half a year, okay? Great results in that product line. The second one, which is transmission and distribution grid automation, this is where we include our railways, sorry, our relays for electrical utilities and railways. We include as well protection and control, automation, et cetera. Good numbers as well, 23% growth. We did very well in roads in our in the new segments that we are focusing, like railway segments for relays. And the one we struggled a little bit more was network reliability, where we went backwards. Reason for that is that we are relying on the market in South America. The nature of this product, this is a product that's installed in the field and requires field crews moving into the field to install it. And it's been very difficult for countries like Brazil and others to install those units in the field during 2021 because of COVID. But we expect that this will recover and get back in line very soon. Final view we have for you is by region. We are organized in four regions: Europe, Middle East, Africa, North America, Latin America, and Asia Pacific. Two regions, they are showing pretty big growth. Europe, Middle East, and Africa, great results in Spain, UK, Saudi, Nordics, pretty much spread all over the region. North America, we have mixed results here. On one hand, we have very positive results from US, and especially in the second half of the year. Mexico has been lagging a little bit because there was a change in policy in the government between, let me say, renewables versus gas. So that has created a little bit of delay, and this year we are going to see the recovery, hopefully. In the case of Latin America, I already mentioned it before, we are struggling with some countries like Chile, Argentina, and Brazil because of COVID. And Asia Pacific, we had a very strong year as well. So overall, as I said, 6.6 improvement in top line. Okay, we'll move to the next slide. And then we can take a look a little bit of a deeper view about our direct margin and our EBITDA margin. Okay, so first of all, just for the sake of clarity, what we understand by direct margin. For our direct margin is equivalent to revenues minus procurement materials, minus direct labor, minus direct operating expenses. Okay, what you can see in this slide is that we have decreased our direct margin in 2021. Okay, and if I go by each one of the components in the slide, you'll see that we have a positive effect of the volume because we have increased our top line. That's 9.2 million euros. Then we have a negative impact on the mix of products. We supply totally different products with totally different margins, and in this year we have increased our railway relay content, which has lower margin than the regular electrical utilities margin. We also expect a decline on some of the services transformers, and the net impact of all of this is that we have a negative minus 2.9 million euros in terms of mix. Then we have the foreign currency. We already mentioned before, it's negative 2.1 million, basically because of Mexican peso impact. And then the area where I would like to draw a little more attention is what you have there in a rectangle dotted line. This is the impact of all the situation we have suffered from raw materials, logistics, et cetera. So what we have experienced in 2021 is an increase in raw materials. We, as Arteche, we do not buy raw materials per se, but we do buy components that include raw materials, copper, aluminum, nickel, oil, et cetera. The prices that we have to pay have increased in 8.7 million euros, right? Then, on top of that, we also have issues with logistics. I'm sure that by now you're all familiar with the problems about delivering materials from Asia into Europe and the incremental of the cost of logistics. That's 2.5 million euros negative. So those are the two negative impacts we have in our margins, okay? What we have done in order to recover this is, first of all, we have launched a number of initiatives in order to improve our efficiency. This can be anything from labor productivity to redesign of products, to change of suppliers, to avoiding single source suppliers, et cetera, et cetera. We have achieved 3.1 million euros with that, okay, positive. And then finally, we have increased prices. So we have increased prices, 1.5 million euros. I would like to explain a little bit more in detail how we have achieved that. Our products, they have different delivery cycles. There are products with very short delivery cycle where an increase of price in the list price pays back its effect very quickly in our profit and loss statement. So, for example, in relays, we increase price, and then in 3 or 4 weeks, we deliver the product, so we can count the price increase very quickly. Some other products, like high voltage transformers, we're talking about several months between the time that we achieve the price increase and the moment that increase is realized in our profit and loss statement. Why is that? Because we have it takes time for the customer to make the decision, and it takes 4 or 5 months for us to manufacture the product. Okay, so we have been able to achieve more price increases in this year 2021 than the ones we have been able to transfer into the P&L. So that will be coming hopefully in this year 2022. Now, any question? Oh, okay, sorry. So I thought you were going to say something. Now, finally, in terms of EBITDA margin, okay, Alex already mentioned it. We have decreased, from 11.3 to 9.3. Affected by, as I have explained, raw materials and logistic headwinds. There are also some one-off effects, like all the cost for the acquisitions, for the M&A acquisitions we did in 2021. But I would like to reinforce the message that we're doing our homework, and we have been able to reduce our structural, our base cost, down to 24.2% in 2021 in comparison with 24.6 last year. So that's pretty much about this slide. So I would like to ask Ixone now to move on to the cash flow piece.
Thank you, Luis Mari. On page 7, we saw free cash flow generation during the year 2021. Starting with 26.1 million euros of reported EBITDA, the main cash outflow was dedicated to our organic capex that stood at 4% of revenue, which is in line with our guidance. That way, EBITDA minus CAPEX reached 56% of reported EBITDA. Financial expenses cash out improved significantly versus a year ago and accounted for 1.4% of revenue as well as tax expenses. Working capital requirements were higher than a year ago, particularly due to inventories. Despite the economic environment affecting our supply chain, especially in the second half of the year, we maintain the mandate of avoiding production stoppages in our factories in order not to disturb the supply chain of our customers. So we decide to prioritize customers' online delivery order fulfillment instead of inventory levels. We have more or less 7 million of extra inventory by year end. Sometimes in the result of the listing in the VME growth amounting to 27.5 million euros after IPO cost, and those were partially allocated to the acquisitions mentioned before, Ezikas in Turkey and Indonesia, and SDO in Australia. All include free cash flow generation in 2021 amounted to 50.5 million euros that allowed for continued deleveraging the company as explained in the following slide. On this slide, we saw the net debt reduction achieved in 2021 as a result of the cash flow generation. Net debt at the end of 2021 stood at 50.9 million euros, which is 23% less than a year ago. And we also managed to improve the average cost and the maturity of the debt. As explained before, our listing in the BME growth was a crucial milestone in 2021. That helped to increase our liquidity reserve and our equity position, therefore optimizing our balance sheet. Financial expenses were especially reduced during the year as a result of financial sourcing diversification, as shown in the right graph of the right side. And additionally, we managed to hedge 62% of the total long-term loans. As a result, our budget financial position has been reinforced during 2021, even improving the target set up in our strategic plan of maintaining the leverage ratio below 2.5 EBITDA. And now I will turn the word to Luis to continue with ESG and expectation for 2022.
Thank you, so let me move, switch gears now and move into ESG, short for environmental sustainability and governance. I would like to start by saying that ESG is deep into our DNA. We have been calling it different names over the whole history of Farfetch, and this is not something new to us, okay? Having said that, I'm going to be showing here a combination of the things that we have done and we have accomplished in 2021 and what we are planning to do in our long-term strategy. So you take a look at the left side of the slide, what we have been able to accomplish in 2021, it's a combination of linking our financing to some of the environmental goals, like reduction of CO2. We have done quite some homework in terms of reducing our hazardous waste. We are reducing our electricity consumption, which is not a bad thing nowadays, keeping in mind the price of electricity. We have increased the number of training hours for our people. We are shifting our supply chain structure in terms of providers. We're increasing more and more the presence of local suppliers and providers. And we didn't have any environmental incident during the year. Now, I would also like to draw your attention to the fact that our board of directors recently approved our strategic goals for 2030, our long-term plan. And this is along five lines that you have described in there. So net zero carbon, 100% use of renewable energy, zero impact of our products and packaging, excellence in corporate governance, and diversity but equality. And those five goals are implemented by 10 strategic objectives. I am not going to be going through all of them, but I just want to point out that these objectives are linked to products, processes, and people. So three P's, so easy to remember. Products, process, and people. Finally, I would like to mention the fact that we have been awarded with some recognition from the market about our initiatives, including some of them which are about to be decided in the next couple of days, like Forbes and Credit Suisse. Okay. And having said that, I would like to move into what's going to be coming, trends, right? So what can we expect from 2022? So this is the 1 million euro question, right? So let's take a look at look forward. Now, what I can say is that we are in the right segment at the right time, in the right market at the right time, right? So the dynamics of our business remain strong. So more electricity is needed, more renewables are needed, fossil fuels are going to be replaced, and we are there to help. Okay. Now, the second point I want to mention is that our footprint is very diversified. So we do not depend on one unique geography, and we have a vast portfolio, right? So that helps us, balance tensions in a given region or in a given product line. As an example, I want to point out that the order intake for the first quarter of the year is been really big with strong double-digit growth, okay? Now, we have 70 years of history, and our business model is resilient. So we have gone through several crises in the past, and we know how to tackle them. We have a price recovery strategy, which is paying benefits. Not in all product lines at the same time, but step by step, we are recovering price. We have redeployed our resources in terms of speeding up cost-saving programs. So we are dedicating more R&D resources into redesign of products in order to be able to produce effectively. The supply chain disruption continues. We all know that. So we have energy, we have raw materials, we have logistics. But sooner or later, it will have to finish, okay? And my last comment is that because we really believe in what we're doing and we really have hopes that we are going to be able to fulfill our strategic plan, the board of directors will propose to the annual general meeting to be held in May the distribution of dividend per share of 30%. which I think that restates our confidence in what the future is going to be taking to us. Alex, I think it's your turn.
Okay. Thank you, Luis. Well, let me wrap up the presentation with a quick view, with a brief summary of how we see Arteche today. As you have in the presentation, we are a company with a leadership position in the market with high barriers of entry, and we are part of this market. We have been in the market 75 years, serving to our customers with high quality, reliable products, offering proximity through actually 13 factories worldwide, and also with flexibility to fulfill the specific needs. We cover the entire electrical network. We are present in generation, transmission, distribution, industrial, and also railway sectors. And most important than that is that we have the trust of the market. We have been in the market for many years. As Luis mentioned, our top line is supported by a strong energy industry growth trends. Everything you heard and read in the news, like renewables, electric vehicle, everything means more electricity. So we are in a moment in which the growth is clear. We have a clear target of growth, and we are constantly looking for delivering higher growth and better margin to our company and shareholders. As Luis mentioned, ESG is part of our DNA, and has been always with the way that we do things. It remains at the forefront of what we do every day. In fact, sustainability is really part of how we drive the company. We also have a clear allocation priorities and disciplined approach to M&A. We have seen that it's already adding value to the company. As a result of that, as Luis has just mentioned, we are going to propose to the General Shareholders Meeting in May 11 to distribute dividend equivalent 30% payout ratio against 2021 net profit. All in, we celebrate this year our 75th anniversary. And as Luis mentioned, with a strong business fundamentals, learning from the past, facing the diverse challenges that we are seeing now in the market, and also opportunities, which is many on the market. And using what Luis mentioned, we are now in the right segment at the right moment. So our vision for the future is really good. So with this, thanks for your attention. We conclude with the presentation, and now we will be happy to address your questions.
As a reminder, if you'd like to register a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind, please press star followed by two, and please ensure you're unmuted when speaking. Again, that's star followed by one for any questions. We've received a question from Robert Jackson of Banco Santander. Robert, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen, and Michonne. Regarding the breakdown of costs, can you give us any messages regarding the outlook or what you're seeing so far this year? Bearing in mind that costs, both raw materials and logistic costs, are continuing to increase, and you're more or less catching up in terms of passing on higher prices. So that means you've still got a long way to go, maybe to recover these higher costs. That's the first question. So give us a bit of a visibility there.
Yeah, I'll take that, Robert. This is Luis. So I would like to explain how we are achieving price increases. Okay, and basically we have three different mechanisms to achieve price increases. First of all, we have some contracts that include formulas, and those formulas are typically linked to some of the raw materials. So in that case, it's relatively easy. It's easy, you know, to get the price increase. However, what we have detected is that some of those formulas didn't cover all the materials that we are using in our production, right? So typically they were very simple formulas, including, let's say, copper and aluminum, and not including many other materials. So this is the first way that we increase price. The second one is different type of products where we have price lists. We have a price list which is published on the internet. We increase it, and that's pretty much it. So that's the second one. And the third one, which is the most complicated and the one we have struggled the most last year, even though we're making good inroads, is about agreements where we don't have any formula. So in other words, we have to go to the utility, the electrical utility, and explain to them what's going on and ask for a price increase. It took us 9 months to achieve the first price increase with one, let me say, without giving names, let me say, big Spanish utility, okay? So those are the mechanisms we have. Okay. Now, what we are seeing is that we are facing a catch-up situation. So let me say, I increase price, and then by the time I manufacture the product, materials have increased even more. Then I increase price again, I calculate my cost at the time of selling the product, and by the time I manufacture it, the material has half increased again, so I have to increase price again. So it's a little bit of a catch-up game. And I was explaining before during the pitch, for products where we have short delivery cycles, it is much easier than for products where we have long delivery cycle. I do not suffer from this catch-up game in relays, for example, or in medium voltage transformers. I suffer quite a lot in this catch-up game with high voltage. So your question, are we addressing price increases in 2022? Yes, we are achieving significant price increases this year. The question is, what's going to happen if price continues to grow? Then we'll have to do more price increases, and then we'll have to increase the frequency. I mean, there are customers who have increased the price 3-4 times. We have suppliers who have increased price to us even more, like 5 times. So I think we have to balance that, and believing that we are completely focused on doing that. And on top of that, since the market is very strong, we are deciding maybe not to participate in some markets where the margin is not so attractive. So we can pick and choose which customers we want to sell, depending on the margin and all that. So that's my answer, Robert.
Okay, so with those three methods, which would you say is the most critical to help to compensate the ongoing rising costs, or more or less the same.
So sorry if I don't hear you.
Yeah, those three methods that you mentioned, which is the most critical to be able to compensate the rising costs.
Yeah, I think the most critical one is the last one, the third one. You know, those customers where we have a frame agreement and where we do not have a formula. This is what we have been working for the last. I told you, I give you the example of 9 months, but we have a number of utilities under the same situation that we are hopefully closing now. Now, the good news is that some of them are backwards effective, so we will be able to recover some of that money, but step by step.
Okay, you mentioned the second question. You mentioned framework agreements. In your order intake, plus 3.7%, can you give us an idea of how much those orders would have increased, including the framework agreements?
Oof, that's a difficult one. So this is about, we declared 3.7% increase in orders, okay? But we are not booking anything, everything, because I mean, just try to explain a little bit more for the benefit of the others, Robert. When we have a frame agreement, the customer tells us they're going to buy us a number of units during a period of time, right? Some companies decide to book it completely, 100%. In Arteche, we only book it when the customer issues a particular order against that frame agreement, telling us what is the delivery cycle for that, what is the delivery date. I'm going to make a little bit of a guess, but I would say that probably there's two or three points more on top of that we consider. It's difficult because we don't really measure it.
Hello, Robert. I'm Alex. Just to complete explanation of Luis. As we mentioned, we are selling to most of the utilities in the world, and the typical way of buying from the utilities is the frame agreements, which typically covers from 1 to 3 years booking. And what we do is we only account the order once we have the order in the backlog. So typically we have a vision of what is going to come, but we don't account until we have already the order. So I don't know, probably as Luis mentioned, could be another 2-3% of the orders in terms of growth, but it's something that could change. But in some cases, you have the volume, but the volume even could go to double depending on the needs of the.
I would say, let me put it very very frankly, volume is not our concern right now.
Yeah.
Not in the priority list.
Okay, understood. And in terms of markets, your exposure to in China, can you give us a bit more visibility there, what you're doing and how it's progressing, and maybe other areas which you could highlight more specifically?
Yeah, we have one factor in China for high voltage transformers that basically we use to deliver goods for our customers in that region, in Asia region. As you know, for the last couple of weeks, there's been all kind of issues in terms of COVID in China with several lockdowns. So we have been suffering for the last 2 weeks. We did not have a complete labor force in our factory. It's probably less than half what we can achieve right now because people are locked down at the homes. And we are also suffering some issues in terms of supply of components and materials. Thanks God, you know, we have been able to have some inventory stock for security reasons over the last few months. And as Isone described, so I would say that the situation improves in the next, I would say, 2-3 weeks, we shouldn't have any effect. If the situation remains, then we'll probably have to redeploy some of the orders from China to the other factories of the group, either Europe or North America or South America. You know that we have 4 different factories for high voltage products, so we can manufacture from the others, even though they will not be as effective in terms of delivery time.
Okay. In terms of all the disruption from the Russia and Ukraine invasion, how's that disrupting your affecting your business?
Okay, we do conduct business in Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus as well. The combination of the 3 countries represent around 0.5% of our revenue, so it's very small.
What about with Turkey? With Asitas, that was supposed to be, or is supposed to be a hub for sending material to the rest of Europe. How is that being affected at all?
No. The 0.5% figure I gave you includes the CITAS business in those countries as well. So, no.
But is, no. So, Turkey and CITAS are running without any real disruptions at all?
No. Turkey is doing very well. Actually, it's doing better than our forecast in terms of synergies. So, you know, we are very happy with the performance of them.
main focus is Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and Asia. The Russian area is not really a big market for them. So it's not been affected.
No.
Okay, my last question is related to: are you seeing any real acceleration of interest from renewables related sales? I mean, there obviously because of the invasion, there is a talk of accelerating renewables. Is it probably too early to see anything, or are you seeing any signs there?
Robert, you know, for example, you know, what you can read on the newspapers about investment is, okay, we want to have more LNG plants, right? So that's great, you know, an LNG plant in order to be able to take gas from a ship and put it into Europe, that will take a couple of years for the project to be developed, and we are not the beginning. We are at the end of the food chain, right? So I think it's too late. You know, what I can tell you, which is a real fact, is that we have seen some customers who were buying products from Russia that are switching to us for similar products. In the case of network reliability, we have a couple of customers already asking us to deliver those products because they have decided not to buy from a particular competitor who is headquartered over there.
And
Okay.
completing what Liz just mentioned, in terms of markets, as you know, the main market for us is Europe and the Americas, North and South America, and also somehow Asia. And those markets are strong, actually, and let's say, somehow protected from the actual situation. So we are seeing really a strong market for the next year.
Mm-hmm. For this year.
For this year. I was going to say the next month, but this year.
Sorry, you said Mexico was lagging due to changes in the renewable and versus gas, and you hope to recover that sometime this year.
Yeah, that has already happened.
It's already happening.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. You know, in Mexico, there used to be a very big policy on renewables, but the government decided to stop that, and now they are focusing on combined cycles. There are 6 combined cycles right now being bid, and we are in the 6 of them. So we expect to have significant orders from Mexico. Well, we're already having them, but we expect to have significant orders from Mexico this year.
So those six combined cycles are for this year, so that's going to be a significant impulse.
Yeah.
Mexico looks nice in the year.
Well, there will not be no for this year, but they will have to start buying components, including ours, this year.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for the questions.
Our next question comes from Alvaro Uriarte with Norbalasa. Alvaro, the line is yours.
Hi, good morning for everyone. Well, first of all, thank you very much for the presentation. We've seen a great performance from inorganic behavior, and I was wondering if you could give more detail on the recent acquisitions you've made, especially in Acitas, and explain a bit what costs and sales synergies you are getting. And finally, is there any EBITDA target for this company for the years ahead? Thank you.
You take the first one, I take the second part.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me explain a little bit the Acitas rationale of the acquisition. Acitas is a medium voltage instrument performance company, which is a strong presence in Turkey and in some European customers and Middle East customers also. The idea for us is to use Acitas as a basement for developing the Turkey and Middle East and Asian markets, with not only with the medium voltage product, but also with the rest of the portfolio. We have seen when we studied the acquisition, we identified some synergies both in cost and in sales. And what we have seen is that Turkey is also a strong country for the electrical industry. So we have seen more opportunities in terms of supply development and also supply chain, let's say, movements. So we are seeing more cost synergies that we identified at the beginning. And also from the sales point of view, it's a very competitive country in which we have seen actually more opportunities that we identified at the beginning from the sales point of view. In general, in export markets, Africa, Middle East, some countries in Asia, and also some customers in Europe. So globally, as I said at the beginning, we did 5 million euros. We are going on track, but we are seeing more than that for the future.
And I think that your question was about how much EBITDA we are expecting from Acitas in 2022. So what we have in our plan is 3.3 million euros. Right, Sonia?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
We have no further questions on the phone line, so I'll hand over to Paloma Indiana of the Investor Relations team for the written questions.
Thank you, Jordan. Good morning, everybody. Just a quick wrap-up of several questions we've received. One of them relating the EBITDA guidance for 2022. Do we have any type of guidance?
I wish I knew. I think it's very difficult to forecast in the short term, in keeping in mind the volatile situation. I feel more confident about forecasting things on the long term. But what I can tell is that we are working on different scenarios depending on how the situation evolves. I'm talking about what happens with the war in Ukraine, what happens with the stress on the supply chain. So those three scenarios, it will depend on things like cost out, inventories, volume, price increases, etc. So I would say that we take as a bottom line what we have achieved in 2021.
Okay, thank you. In terms of price increases or catch-up, as Luis Mari said before, we have a question regarding cost increases to customers in orders already booked in Q1 2022.
So is it fair to give the percentage of price increases? I'm not sure. I mean, we do have a percentage of price increase in high voltage, but my concern is that this is basically information that the competitors can use. So I can give you the number with 2 digits of accuracy. I would say it's high single digit, but I am not going to get any more into detail because Alex doesn't allow me.
No, but what we have, we could say that we have a strong price recovery strategy.
Mm-hmm.
We are working together with most of our customers. We can say that we are receiving a positive reaction from the market. And we hope that this price recovery strategy will have results in this year. But we cannot disclose the numbers and so on.
Okay. Some questions regarding our financial debt. One regarding, maybe Sonny can take this one, maturity of the current debt. Okay. The maturity of our debt is more than 5 years. It depends on the different loans. For example, the syndicate loan has a maturity on 2026. The European Investment Bank is in 2028, but we have more than 5 years. Okay, and in terms of the commercial paper programs we have right now in place, they're asking when do we have to roll over that commercial paper? Okay, it depends. We are very happy with this program because we are decreasing the cost of the program and increasing the maturity, and we have from 3 months to also 11 months of maturity. Okay, and to finish with debt, we're receiving also a last question about what we expect for debt evolution for 2022. Okay, as I explained before, we finished 2021 with a big investment in raw material and in inventory. So we think that with the price increases we are doing and with other contingency plans, that we are going to have positive cash flow in 2022. Okay, two more, just finish. One for Alex, maybe, about M&A targets, taking into account the proceeds we got from the IPO.
Well, we have a pipeline of different opportunities that we are studying. Those opportunities fit with the three pillars of the business of Arteche, the measurement and monitoring business, the automation business, and also the
reliability
business, and also with a special focus in the market targets, which, remembering what we said in the IPO, it's the development of the Asian market and also to strengthen our position in countries like the U.S. or in some cases Europe. So we have a pipeline that we're studying. Now we are being we have some of the opportunity that we are actually analyzing with different stages of the process. But at the same time, we are very cautious considering the situation. So we are still doing the NOAIC. We have some processes on track. As you can imagine, we cannot develop which are those. But we're still looking for the inorganic.
Okay, and just one more to finish, maybe this one to our general manager. They're asking if regarding the guidance we gave at the 2023 guidance we gave at the time of the IPO, our strategic plan, if we feel comfortable to reiterate this guidance today.
I think we have mentioned a couple of times during the presentation that we feel strong about the fundamentals of our business. So we believe that it's achievable and that we stick to our promises.
Okay. So I think, Jordan, this is all for today. And I'll pass the word to Alex for him to wrap up the presentation.
Well, thanks to all of you for the presence today together with us. Thanks for the attention. Thanks for the questions. And we are going these days to be on roadshow, following days, and maybe with some of you. And the investor relations team, we also will be available for address your follow-up questions. And again, thanks again. See you soon. Thanks for your trust and your support.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our full year 2021 results presentation. I'm Alex Arteche, President and CEO of Arteche Group, and today I'm together with Luis Mari Pérez, General Manager of Arteche, and Isone Vicente, CFO of the company. Before starting the results presentation, I would like to share with you that we are very excited to be a listed company since last June 2021. It is a very significant milestone in our history, initiated already 75 years ago. Being a listed company reinforced our management commitment to generate shareholders value. Let's start now with page two, with a few highlights of what has been year 2021. First of all, this year we generate earnings per share of 0.16 euros, which is 8 times higher than a year ago, as a result mainly of higher sales volume and a disciplined financial management. We achieved revenues of 282 million euros, which were up nearly 4% organically. I would like to emphasize also that we have a particular strength in the segments of measurement and monitoring systems, as well as in transmission and distribution grid automation. We were certainly, as most of the industry, impacted by supply chain constraints, which has had an impact on our EBITDA this year. EBITDA margin of 9.3% was down 200 basic points year over year, and the decline was driven mainly by higher input costs and supply chain disruptions. On price recovery, we made good progress in the year, but certainly not fast enough to prevent some operating margin erosion in the year. On top of that, we managed to optimize overhead structure costs in relative terms. As you see, CapEx, excluding acquisitions, reached 4% of revenues in the year, in line with the guidelines that we present to the market in the IPO. 60% of this CapEx was dedicated to capacity growth and maintenance, and 40% was focused on development of new products and technology. As a result of that, EBITDA minus CapEx amounted 56% of fiscal year 2021 EBITDA. Our inorganic growth targets for 2021, which we shared with the market in the time of the IPO, were fulfilled in the second half of the year, with the acquisition of both Esitas Group and Smart Digital Optics. I will go later with this in the recall. In both transactions, the identified synergies that we identified at the beginning are even ahead of the schedule. And finally, as a last remark, net debt at the end of the year stood at nearly 51 million euros, which is equivalent to a leverage ratio of 1.95, versus 95 EBITDA versus 2.22 times a year ago. Going to slide three, as you see there, I would like here to share with you that 2021 has been a very transformational year for Digit, a year in which we have broadened our reaches from a shareholder point of view, as well as from a business perspective. Starting with our listing in BME Growth Market last June 11, after a successful IPO in which we were able to raise 30 million euros in funds for supporting our inorganic growth strategy until 2023. I will go to the inorganic growth strategy that we were able to materialize through the second half of the year. First one was in July 9 with the acquisition of Esita Group. Esita Group is a company founded 35 years ago, headquartered in Istanbul in Turkey, and with facilities in Turkey and Indonesia. This transaction boosts our industrial position in Asia in line with our strategic plan and reinforces also our leadership in the medium and low voltage instrument market, instrument transformer market. We have identified synergies amounting 2 million euros, which I'm glad to say that are being implemented on track. The second operation was done in last December 17 with the joint venture between one of our main customers, Hitachi Energy, in which in this JV we will keep the control with 51% of the company. This JV definitely means a further step to our plan located in Vitoria. We will join forces with Hitachi to promote a new solution, new gas insulated solution for the transformers. We really have a huge expectation for this JV. And last but not least, on December 21, we completed the acquisition of Smart Digital Optics, which is a company based in Australia, in which we already had the 57% of the company since 2010. HDO is a company in which we manufacture optical fiber current sensors for the electrical power industry. This is a technology that facilitates the digitalization of substations, and also this technology is also used in the renewable market interconnections, and it will gain increasing market share in the coming years. After these three transactions, we can say today that our group has a stronger position in the industry with new strategic locations reaching already 175 countries sales. We have now a broader portfolio, and therefore we are adding value both to our customers and to our shareholders. This is a quick view of the year, and now I will now turn the word over to Luis Mari to walk through the main financial data of the year.
Thanks, Alice, and good morning to everybody. So I would like to start with the financial highlights for 2021. First of all, I would like to start by saying that 2021 has not been an easy year. We had to navigate through COVID, through supply chain and raw material issues. But I would like to say that we are very proud of the results we have achieved as a team. In terms of the metric that we are showing in this page, I would like to start with the orders. Orders, you know, in 2021 reached 285.9 million, meaning a 3.7 increase versus previous year. Actually, the numbers could have been higher because our internal policy is not to book frame agreements that we want with customers. In terms of revenues, you know, we did 282 million, 6.6 better than previous year. EBITDA at 26.1. This is the area where we're struggling the most, and we'll be deep diving a little bit on this in the next slides. Outstanding net profit with 8.5 million euros, 16 cents per share, 8 times bigger than last year. And finally, our leverage ratio is below 2%, 1.95, which means a 23% reduction versus previous year. So I think we are very proud of the results, and also I would like to point out that order intake in the first quarter of 2022 also looks very promising. If we move to the next slide, we can do a little bit of deeper analysis in terms of our top line performance. I would like to draw your attention to the left side of the slide, revenues top line. What you can see there is a waterfall chart showing the increase 21 versus 2020. Okay, it's 6.6%. Okay, we have divided between organic and inorganic. It's similar, 3.8% in inorganic, 4.2% inorganic. Inorganic is coming from our acquisition in Citas, Turkey, and Indonesia. Okay, that's a medium voltage company. On the negative side, we have a 1.4% negative effect on our basket of currencies. Especially this is coming from Mexico, peso revaluation that impacted negatively. Okay. If we move now to the right side of the slide, we have two views for you. The one on the top is about the view by major product lines. If you remember from previous presentations, we are organized in three different major product lines. The one on the bottom, what we call measurement and monitoring systems, this is basically our instrument transformers business, which is the biggest in terms of volume. And you see that we have grown around 11.5%, double-digit growth last year. And I can split this in halves between what is organic and what is inorganic. I mentioned before, we have a Citas here. It's a medium voltage instrument transformer company, and their numbers starting July are included there. So it's a little bit less than half a year, okay? Great results in that product line. The second one, which is transmission and distribution grid automation, this is where we include our relays for electrical utilities and railways. We include as well protection and control, automation, etc. Good numbers as well, 23% growth. We did very well in inroads in the new segments that we are focusing, like railway segments for relays. And the one we struggled a little bit more was network reliability, where we went backwards. Reason for that is that we are relying on the market in South America. The nature of this product is installed in the field and requires field crews moving into the field to install it. And it's been very difficult for countries like Brazil and others to install those units in the field during 2021 because of COVID. But we expect that this will recover and get back in line very soon. Final view we have for you is by region. We are organized in four regions: Europe, Middle East, Africa, North America, Latin America, and Asia Pacific. Two regions, they are showing pretty big growth. Europe, Middle East, and Africa, great results in Spain, UK, Saudi, Nordics, pretty much spread all over the region. North America, we have mixed results here. On one hand, we have very positive results from US, and especially in the second half of the year. Mexico has been lagging a little bit because there was a change in policy in the government between renewables versus gas. So that has created a little bit of delay, and this year we are going to see the recovery, hopefully. In the case of Latin America, I already mentioned it before, we are struggling with some countries like Chile, Argentina, and Brazil because of COVID. And Asia Pacific, we had a very strong year as well. So overall, as I said, 6.6 improvement in top line. Okay, we'll move to the next slide. And then we can take a look a little bit of a deeper view about our direct margin and our EBITDA margin. Okay, so first of all, just for the sake of clarity, what we understand by direct margin. For our direct margin is equivalent to revenues minus procurement materials, minus direct labor, minus direct operating expenses. Okay, what you can see in this slide is that we have decreased our direct margin in 2021. Okay, and if I go by each one of the components in the slide, you'll see that we have a positive effect of the volume because we have increased our top line. That's 9.2 million euros. Then we have a negative impact on the mix of products. We supply totally different products with totally different margins, and in this year we have increased our railway relay content, which has lower margin than the regular electrical utilities margin. We also expect a decline on some of the services transformers, and the net impact of all of this is that we have a negative minus 2.9 million euros in terms of mix. Then we have the foreign currency. We already mentioned before, it's negative, 2.1 million, basically because of Mexican peso impact. And then the area where I would like to draw a little more attention is what you have there in a rectangle dotted line. This is the impact of all the situation we have suffered from raw materials, logistics, et cetera. So what we have experienced in 2021 is an increase in raw materials. We, as Alteche, we do not buy raw materials per se, but we do buy components that include raw materials, copper, aluminum, nickel, oil, et cetera. The prices that we have to pay have increased in 8.7 million euros, right? Then, on top of that, we also have issues with logistics. I'm sure that by now you are all familiar with the problems about delivering materials from Asia into Europe and the incremental of the cost of logistics. That's 2.5 million euros negative. So those are the two negative impacts we have in our margins, okay? What we have done in order to recover this is, first of all, we have launched a number of initiatives in order to improve our efficiency. This can be anything from labor productivity to redesign of products, to change of suppliers, to avoiding single source suppliers, et cetera, et cetera. We have achieved 3.1 million euros with that, okay, positive. And then finally, we have increased prices. So we have increased prices, 1.5 million euros. I would like to explain a little bit more in detail how we have achieved that. Our products, they have different delivery cycles. There are products with very short delivery cycle where an increase of price in the list price pays back its effect very quickly in our profit and loss statement. So, for example, in relays, we increase price, and then in 3 or 4 weeks, we deliver the product, so we can count the price increase very quickly. Some other products, like high voltage transformers, we're talking about several months between the time that we achieve the price increase and the moment that increase is realized in our profit and loss statement. Why is that? Because it takes time for the customer to make the decision, and it takes 4 or 5 months for us to manufacture the product. Okay, so we have been able to achieve more price increases in this year 2021 than the ones we have been able to transfer into the P&L. So that will be coming hopefully in this year 2022. Now, any question? Oh, okay, sorry. So I thought you were going to say something. Now, finally, in terms of EBITDA margin, okay, Alex already mentioned it. We have decreased, from 11.3 to 9.3. Affected by, as I have just explained, raw materials and logistic headwinds. There are also some one-off effects, like all the cost for the acquisitions, for the M&A acquisitions we did in 2021. But I would like to reinforce the message that we're doing our homework, and we have been able to reduce our base cost, down to 24.2% in 2021 in comparison with 24.6 last year. So that's pretty much about this slide, so I would like to ask Ixone now to move on to the cash flow, please.
Thank you, Luis Mari. On page 7, we saw free cash flow generation during the year 2021, starting with 26.1 million euros of reported EBITDA. The main cash outflow was dedicated to our organic capex that stood at 4% of revenue, which is in line with our guidance. That way, EBITDA minus CAPEX reached 56% of reported EBITDA. Financial expenses cash out improved significantly versus a year ago and accounted for 1.4% of revenue as well as tax expenses. Working capital requirements were higher than a year ago, particularly due to inventories. Despite the economic environment affecting our supply chain, especially in the second half of the year, we maintain the mandate of avoiding production stoppages in our factories in order not to distort the supply chain of our customers. So we decide to prioritize customers' online delivery order fulfillment instead of inventory levels. We have more or less 7 million of extra inventory by year end. Some gains in the result of the listing in the VME growth amounting to 27.5 million euros after IPO cost, and those were partially allocated to the acquisitions mentioned before, Ezika in Turkey and Indonesia, and SBO in Australia. All included, free cash flow generation in 2021 amounted to 50.5 million euros that allowed for continued deleveraging the company, as explained in the following slide. On this slide, we saw the net debt reduction achieved during 2021 as a result of the cash flow generation. Net debt at the end of 2021 stood at 50.9 million euros, which is 23% less than a year ago. We also managed to improve the average cost and the maturity of the debt. As explained before, our listing in the Bimi Group was a crucial milestone in 2021 that helped to increase our liquidity reserve and our equity position, therefore optimizing our balance sheet. Financial expenses were especially reduced during the year as a result of financial sourcing diversification, as shown in the right graph of the right side. Additionally, we managed to hedge 62% of the total long-term loans. As a result, our better financial position has been reinforced during 2021, even improving the target set up in our strategic plan of maintaining the leverage ratio below 2.5x EBITDA. Now I will turn the word to Luis to continue with ESG and expectation for 2022.
Thank you, Vanessa. Let me switch gears now and move into ESG, short for environmental, sustainability, and governance. I would like to start by saying that ESG is deep into our DNA. We have been calling it different names over the whole history of Arteche, and this is not something new to us, okay? Having said that, I'm going to be showing here a combination of the things that we have done and we have accomplished in 2021 and what we are planning to do in our long-term strategy. If you take a look at the left side of the slide, what we have been able to accomplish in 2021, it's a combination of linking our financing to some of the, you know, environmental goals, like reduction of CO2. We have done quite some homework in terms of reducing our hazardous waste. We are reducing our electricity consumption, which is not a bad thing nowadays, keeping in mind the price of electricity. We have increased the number of training hours for our people. We are shifting our supply chain structure in terms of providers. We're increasing more and more the presence of local suppliers and providers. We didn't have any environmental incident during the year. Now, I would also like to draw your attention to the fact that our board of directors recently approved our strategic goals for 2030, our long-term plan. This is along five lines that you have described in there. Net zero carbon, 100% use of renewable energy, zero impact of our products and packaging, excellence in corporate governance, and diversity, but equality. Those five goals are implemented by 10 strategic objectives. I am not going to be going through all of them, but I just want to point out that these objectives are linked to products, processes, and people. Three Ps, so easy to remember. Products, process, and people. Finally, I would like to mention the fact that we have been awarded with some recognition from the market about our initiatives, including some of them which are about to be decided in the next couple of days, like Forbes and Credit Suisse. Okay? Having said that, I would like to move into what's going to be coming, trends, right? What can we expect from 2022? This is the 1 million euro question, right? Let's take a look forward. Now, what I can say is that we are in the right segment at the right time, in the right market at the right time, right? The dynamics of our business remain strong. More electricity is needed, more renewables are needed, fossil fuels are going to be replaced, and we are there to help, okay? Now, the second point I want to mention is that our footprint is very diversified. We do not depend on one unique geography, and we have, you know, a vast portfolio, right? So that help us, you know, balance tensions in a given region or in a given product line. As an example, I want to point out that the order intake for the first half, for the first quarter of the year is been really big with strong double-digit growth, okay? Now, we have 70 years of history, and our business model is resilient. So we have gone through several crises in the past, and we know how to tackle them. We have a price recovery strategy, which is paying benefits, not in all product lines at the same time, but step by step, we are recovering price. We have redeployed our resources in terms of speeding up cost-saving programs. So we are dedicating more R&D resources into redesign of products in order to be able to produce effectively. The supply chain disruption continues. We all know that. So we have energy, we have raw materials, we have logistics, but sooner or later it will have to finish. Okay. And my last comment is that because we really believe in what we're doing and we really have hopes that we are going to be able to fulfill our strategic plan, the board of directors will propose to the annual general meeting to be held in May the distribution of dividend per share of 30%, which I think that restates our confidence in what the future is going to be taking to us. Alex, I think it's your turn.
Okay, thank you, Luis. Well, let me wrap up the presentation with a quick view, with a brief summary of how we see our business today. As you have in the presentation, we are a company with a leadership position in the market with high barriers of entry, and we are part of this market. We have been in the market 75 years, serving to our customers with high quality, reliable products, offering proximity through actually 13 factors worldwide, and also with flexibility to provide the to fulfill the specific needs. We cover the entire electrical network. We are present in generation, transmission, distribution, industrial, and also railway sectors. And most important than that is that we have the trust of the market. We have been in the market for many years. As Luis mentioned, our top line is supported by a strong energy industry growth trends. Everything you heard and read in the news, like renewables, electric vehicle, everything is means more electricity. So we are in a moment in which the growth is clear. So on, we have a clear target of growth, and we are constantly looking for delivering higher growth and better margin to our company and shareholders. As Luis mentioned, ESG is part of our values, our DNA, and has been always with the way that we do things. It remains at the forefront of what we do every day. In fact, sustainability is really part of how we drive the company. We also have a clear allocation priorities and disciplined approach to M&A. We have seen that it's already adding value to the company. As a result of that, as Luis has just mentioned, we are going to propose to the General Shareholders Meeting in May 11 to distribute dividend equivalent 30% payout ratio against 2021 net profit. All in, we celebrate this year our 75th anniversary. And as Luis mentioned, with a strong business fundamentals, learning from the past, facing the diverse challenges that we are seeing now in the market, and also opportunities, which is many on the market. And using what Luis mentioned, we are now in the right segment at the right moment. So our vision for the future is really good. So with this, thanks for your attention. We conclude with the presentation, and now we will be happy to address your questions.
As a reminder, if you'd like to register a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind, please press star followed by two, and please ensure you're unmuted when speaking. Again, that's star followed by one for any questions. We've received a question from Robert Jackson of Banco Santander. Robert, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen, and Sonia. Regarding the breakdown of costs, can you give us any messages regarding the outlook or what you're seeing so far this year, bearing in mind that costs, both raw materials and logistic costs, are continuing to increase, and you're more or less catching up in terms of passing on higher prices. So that means you've still got a long way to go, maybe, to recover these higher costs. That's the first question, so give us a bit of a visibility there.
Yeah, I'll take that, Robert. This is Luis. So I would like to explain how we are achieving price increases, okay? And basically, we have three different mechanisms to achieve price increases. First of all, we have some contracts that include formulas, and those formulas are typically linked to some of the raw materials. So in that case, it's relatively easy. It's easy, to get the price increase. However, what we have detected is that some of those formulas didn't cover all the materials that we are using in our production, right? So typically, they were very simple formulas, including, let's say, copper and aluminum, and not including many other materials. So this is the first way that we increase price. The second one is different type of products where we have price lists. We have a price list which is established on the internet. We increase it, and that's pretty much it. So that's the second one. And the third one, which is the most complicated and the one we have struggled the most last year, even though we're making good inroads, is about agreements where we don't have any formula. So in other words, we have to go to the utility, the electrical utility, and explain to them what's going on and ask for a price increase. It took us 9 months to achieve the first price increase with one, let me say, without giving names, let me say, big Spanish utility. Okay? So those are the mechanisms we have. Okay. Now, what we are seeing is that we are facing a catch-up situation. So let me say, I increase price, and then by the time I manufacture the product, materials have increased even more. Then I increase price again, I calculate my cost at the time of selling the product, and by the time I manufacture it, the material has half increased again, so I have to increase price again. So it's a little bit of a catch-up game. And I was explaining before during the pitch, for products where we have short delivery cycles, it is much easier than for products where we have long delivery cycle. I do not suffer from this catch-up game in relays, for example, or in medium voltage transformers. I suffer quite a lot in this catch-up game with high voltage. So your question, are we addressing price increases in 2022? Yes, we are achieving significant price increases this year. The question is, what's going to happen if price continue to grow? Then we'll have to do more price increases, and then we'll have to increase the frequency. I mean, there are customers who we have increased the price 3-4 times. We have suppliers who have increased price to us even more, like 5 times. So I think we have to balance that, and believing that we are completely focused on doing that. And on top of that, since the market is very strong, we are deciding maybe not to participate in some markets where the margin is not so attractive. So we can pick and choose which customers we want to sell, depending on the margin and all that. So that's my answer, Robert.
Okay, so with those three methods, which would you say is the most critical to help to compensate the ongoing rising costs, or more or less the same.
So sorry if I don't hear you well.
Yeah, those three methods that you mentioned, which is the most critical to be able to compensate the rising costs.
Yeah, I think the most critical one is the last one, the third one. Those customers where we have a frame agreement and where we do not have a formula. This is what we have been working for the last. I told you I give an example of 9 months, but we have a number of utilities under the same situation that we are hopefully closing now. Now, the good news is that some of them are backwards effective, so we will be able to recover some of that money, but step by step.
Okay, you mentioned the second question. You mentioned framework agreements. In your order intake, plus 3.7%, Can you give us an idea of how much those orders would have increased, including the framework agreements?
That's a difficult one. So this is about, we declared 3.7% increase in orders, okay? But we are not booking everything because some of, let me just try to explain a bit more for the benefit of the others, Robert. When we have a frame agreement, the customer tells us they're going to buy us a number of units during a period of time, right? Some companies decide to book it completely, 100%. In Arteche, we only book it when the customer issues a particular order against that frame agreement, telling us what is the delivery cycle for that, what is the delivery date. I'm going to make a little bit of a guess, but I would say that probably there's two or three points more on top of that we consider. It's difficult because we don't really measure it.
Hello, Robert. I'm Alex. Just to complete the explanation of Luis, we mentioned, we are selling to most of the utilities in the world, and the typical way of buying from the utilities is the frame agreements, which typically covers from 1 to 3 years booking. And what we do is we only account the order once we have the order in the backlog. So typically, we have a vision of what is going to come, but we don't account until we have already the order. So I don't know, probably as Luis mentioned, could be another 2-3% of the orders in terms of growth, but it's something that could change. But in some cases, you have the volume, but the volume even could go to double depending on the needs of the.
I would say, let me put it very, very frankly, volume is not our concern right now.
Yeah.
Not in the priority list.
Okay, understood. And in terms of markets, your exposure to in China, can you give us a bit more visibility there, what you're doing and how it's progressing, and maybe other areas which you could highlight more specifically?
Yeah, we have one factory in China for high voltage transformers that basically we use to deliver goods for our customers in that region, in Asia region. As you know, for the last couple of weeks, there's been all kind of issues in terms of COVID in China with several lockdowns. So we have been suffering for the last 2 weeks. We do not have a complete labor force in our factory. It's probably less than half what we can achieve right now because people are locked down at their homes. And we are also suffering some issues in terms of supply of components and materials. Thanks God, we have been able to have some inventory stock for security reasons over the last few months. And as Ison described, so I would say that if situation improves in the next, I would say, 2-3 weeks, we shouldn't have any effect. If the situation remains, then we'll probably have to redeploy some of the orders from China to the other factories of the group, either Europe or North America or South America. You know that we have four different factories for high voltage products, so we can manufacture from the others, even though they will not be as effective in terms of delivery time.
In terms of all the disruption from the Russia-Ukraine invasion, how's that disrupting your affecting your business?
Okay. We do conduct business in Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus as well. The combination of the three countries represent around 0.5% of our revenue, so it's very small.
What about with Turkey? With Aşıkkale, that was supposed to be, or is supposed to be a hub for sending material to the rest of Europe. How is that being affected at all?
No. The 0.5% figure I gave you includes the Cetas business in those countries. So no.
But is no. So Turkey and Cetas are running without any real disruptions at all.
No. Turkey is doing very well. Actually, it's doing better than our forecast in terms of synergies. So we are very happy with the performance of them.
Main market, main focus is Europe, Middle East and Africa, and Asia. let's say the Russian area is not really a big market for them. So it's not been affected.
No.
Okay, my last question is related to, are you seeing any real acceleration of interest from renewables related sales? I mean, there obviously because of the invasion, there is a talk of accelerating renewables. Is it probably too early to see anything, or are you seeing any signs there?
Robert, you know, for example, you know, what you can read in the newspapers about investment is, okay, we want to have more LNG plants, right? So that's great, you know, an LNG plant in order to be able to take gas from a ship and put it into Europe, that will take a couple of years for the project to be developed. And we are not at the beginning, we are at the end of the food chain, right? So I think it's too late. You know, what I can tell you, which is a real fact, is that we have seen some customers who were buying products from Russia that are switching to us for similar products. In the case of network reliability, we have a couple of customers already asking us to deliver those products because they have decided not to buy from a particular competitor who is headquartered over there.
Okay.
Completing what Liz just mentioned, in terms of markets, as you know, the main market for us is Europe and the Americas, North and South America, and also somehow Asia. And those markets are strong, actually, and let's say somehow protected from the actual situation. So we are seeing really a strong market for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
For this year. I was going to say the next month, but this year.
Sorry, you said Mexico was lagging due to changes in the renewable versus gas, and you hope to recover that sometime this year.
Yeah, that has already happened.
It's already happening.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. You know, in Mexico, there used to be a very big policy on renewables. That the government decided to stop that, and now they are focusing on combined cycles. There are six combined cycles right now being bid, and we are in the six of them. So we expect to have significant orders from Mexico. Well, we're already having them, but we expect to have significant orders from Mexico this year.
So those six combined cycles are for this year, so that's going to be a significant impulse.
Yeah.
Mexico looks nice in the year.
Well, there will not be no this year, but they will have to start buying components, including ours, this year.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for the questions.
Our next question comes from Alvaro Uriarte with Norbalasa. Alvaro, the line is yours.
Hi, good morning for everyone. Well, first of all, thank you very much for the presentation. We've seen a great performance from inorganic behavior, and I was wondering if you could give more detail on the recent acquisitions you've made, especially in Acitas, and explain a bit what costs and sales synergies you are getting. And finally, is there any EBITDA target for this company for the years ahead? Thank you.
You take the first one, I take the second part.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me explain a little bit the CITAS rationale of the acquisition. CITAS is a medium voltage instrument performance company, which is a strong presence in Turkey and in some European customers and Middle East customers also. The idea for us is to use CITAS as a placement for developing Turkey and Middle East and Asian markets, with not only with the medium voltage product, but also with the rest of the portfolio. We have seen when we studied the acquisition, we identified some synergies both in cost and in sales. And what we have seen is that Turkey is also a strong country for the electrical industry. So we have seen more opportunities in terms of supply development, and also supply change, let's say, movements. So we are seeing more cost synergies that we identified at the beginning. And also from the sales point of view, it's a very competitive country in which we have seen actually more opportunities that we identified at the beginning from the sales point of view. In general, in export markets, Africa, Middle East, some countries in Asia, and also some customers in Europe. So globally, as I said at the beginning, we did 5 million euros. We are going on track, but we are seeing more than that for the future.
And I think that your question was about how much EBITDA we are expecting from Acitas in 2022. So what we have in our plan is 3.3 million euros. Right, Sonia?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
We have no further questions on the phone line, so I'll hand over to Paloma Indiana of the Investor Relations team for the written questions.
Thank you, Jordan. Good morning, everybody. Just a quick wrap-up of several questions we've received. One of them relating the EBITDA guidance for 2022. Do we have any type of guidance?
I wish I knew. I think it's very difficult to forecast in the short term, in keeping in mind the volatile situation. I feel more confident about forecasting things on the long term. But what I can tell is that we are working on different scenarios depending on how the situation evolves. I'm talking about what happens with the war in Ukraine, what happens with the stress on the supply chain. So those three scenarios, it will depend on things like cost out, inventories, volume, price increases, etc. So I would say that we take as a bottom line what we have achieved in 2021.
Okay, thank you. In terms of price increases or catch-up, as Luis Mari said before, we have a question regarding cost increases to customers in orders already booked in Q1 2022.
So is it fair to give the percentage of price increases? I'm not sure. I mean, we do have a percentage of price increase in high voltage, but my concern is that this is basically information that the competitors can use. So I can give you the number with two digits of accuracy. I would say it's high single digit, but I am not going to get any more into detail because Alex doesn't allow me.
No, but what we have, we could say that we have a strong price recovery strategy.
Mm-hmm.
We are working together with most of our customers. We can say that we are receiving a positive reaction from the market. And we hope that this price recovery strategy will have results in this year. But we cannot disclose the numbers and so on.
Okay. Some questions regarding our financial debt. One regarding maybe Sonny can take this one. Maturity of the current debt.
Okay. The maturity of our debt is more than 5 years. It depends on the different loans. For example, the syndicate loan has a maturity on 2026. The European Investment Bank is in 2028, but we have more than 5 years.
Okay, and in terms of the commercial paper programs we have right now in place, they're asking when do we have to roll over that commercial paper?
Okay, it depends. We are very happy with this program because we are decreasing the cost of the program and increasing the maturity, and we have from 3 months to also 11 months of maturity.
Okay, and to finish with debt, we're receiving also a last question about what we expect for debt evolution for 2022.
Okay, as I explained before, we finished 2021 with a big investment in raw material and in inventory. So we think that with the price increases we are doing and with other contingency plans, that we are going to have positive cash flow in 2022.
Okay, two more. Just finish. One for Alex, maybe, about M&A targets, taking into account the proceeds we got from the IPO.
Well, we have a pipeline of different opportunities that we are studying. Those opportunities fit with the three pillars of the business of Arteche, the measurement and monitoring business, the automation business, and also the
reliability
business, and also with a special focus in the market targets, which, remembering what we said in the IPO, it's the development of the Asian market and also to strengthen our position in countries like the U.S. or in some cases Europe. So we have a pipeline that we're studying. Now we are being, we have some of the pros of the opportunity that we are actually analyzing with different stages of the process. But at the same time, we are very, cautious considering the situation. So we are still doing the NOAIC. We have some processes on track. As you can imagine, we cannot develop which are those. But we're still looking for the inorganic.
Okay, and just one more to finish. Maybe this one to our general manager. They're asking if, regarding the guidance we gave at the 2023 guidance we gave at the time of the IPO, our strategic plan, if we feel comfortable to reiterate this guidance today.
I think we have mentioned a couple of times during the presentation that we feel strong about the fundamentals of our business. So we believe that it's achievable and that we stick to our promises.
Okay. So I think, Jordan, this is all for today. And I'll pass the word to Alex for him to wrap up the presentation.
Well, thanks to all of you for the presence today together with us. Thanks for the attention. Thanks for the questions, and we are going these days to be on roadshow following days, and maybe with some of you, and the investor relations team, we also will be available for address your follow-up questions, and again, thanks again, see you soon, and thanks for your trust and your support.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.